Okay, Abby, what are we here to talk about today?
I was wondering if you can give me an example of what Hebraic thought would look like.
Okay. So we mean one idea in the Bible that's worked out across all the text or seems to be agreed upon by all the biblical authors to some extent. Okay. I think a good example would be the idea of justice. Justice is a really broad idea in Scripture. So we think of justice often. Well, I don't know. What do you think of when you hear the word, like, I'm going to get justice?
Maybe like revenge or punishment for the evildoer, sometimes synonymous with equality.
Okay, yeah. So that sounds like it's probably the common idea of what people think of when they think of justice, and especially old school justice from the Bible, you know? But of course, Leviticus 19 teaches vengeance is God's, not ours, right? So he takes away revenge, like that's no longer in the scheme of justice. So now what's justice if nobody can have revenge on anybody else? And he also teaches like eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, when people have harmed each other. And so there's this other question of what does that even mean? Because it becomes a problem. Like the rabbis at some place explored a very famous problem where a one-eyed man pokes out the eye of a two-eyed man. And now you're stuck with like, well, if we poke out the one good eye that's left in the one-eyed man, it's actually created a new problem because the whole point is it was supposed to be an equal punishment for what he did, but it's actually unequal because now he's blind rather than just missing one eye. So there's just all kinds of problems with, you know, getting people back if that's the goal. But justice across the Bible, so this has to be worked out very carefully, but across the Bible, you see this one impulse that keeps on popping back up, and it's not about people getting other people back, or even people getting punished, although punishment, like everything, has to be worked out in the scheme. And maybe we can think of it this way. If you could think of a parent having to bring justice into the family when one of their children has wronged one of the other children, maybe one of the children, I don't know, beat up one of the other kids, you know, or punched them or did or broke, you know, went and vandalized their room because it did something that really violated their relationship. And so the parent is now responsible for, like, getting these kids back into a loving relationship with each other. Maybe something like that is a better model. So you're going to have some punishment involved. You might have to say, okay, you're grounded, or we're going to take away your things. I mean, maybe if it was an extreme circumstance, you might even say, we're going to break one of your things, right? Not advocating anything. I'm just saying, you can imagine every parent is stuck in these dilemmas where you're actually trying to use your moral imagination to think, how should we bring these two people back together? What's fair? What will teach the lesson the best? But at the same time, it's not like you're saying, well, forget about the kid, you know, the kid who violated, the one who broke, the one who hit. It's not like you forget about them and to say, well, they don't matter anymore because they're a lawbreaker. So now whatever happens to them, they have coming to them. You're thinking, no, how do I restore this person? How do I maintain their dignity? So that's a lot of what's going on behind punishment and justice in Scripture. Is how do we restore people? Remember, there's no jails, you know, across Scripture. You don't put anybody in jail. You can't lock anybody up. So now what? They're in your community. And often it comes down to what they did violates their relationship with God so much they either have to be executed or have to be restored. And that's really your only two big choices. So the thing that keeps on coming up in the middle of this is, well, what are the kinds of things that that need to be looked out for? So if this is the system, you have a bunch of people who are trying to live together in hard times and good times, who's responsible for looking out for whom, to what degree, how do you handle things when violence erupts or... and the impulse that keeps on coming back up, I think surprisingly for most Christians, is... you need to pay very careful attention to those who are vulnerable, right? So those who are, you would assume people who have maybe mental capacity issues are not, they're not able to take care of themselves mentally. I think somebody with Down syndromes, obviously they would have had that as well. The poor, the widow, the orphan, the stranger or sojourner, which we would call the immigrant today, although you'd have to translate that a little bit, but you know, the idea of an immigrant in most nations, you have zero rights as an immigrant in the ancient world. And so Israel says, no, they can come in and belong to Israel. They can worship God. They can do everything alongside an Israelite. So they're already given rights, and there's all this protections for them that you can't treat them however you want, though, right? You have to be very careful how you treat people. And especially in these situations, you have to be very careful how you treat people who are vulnerable, who would be easy to exploit. Mm. So children, widows, orphans, strangers. I mean, the reason those people groups get tagged out all the time in both the Torah, the Pentateuch, the books of Moses, and the prophets, and by Jesus, is because those are the easiest people to exploit. Just think of Santa Claus. Why do we tell children there's a Santa Claus? Why don't we tell grown adults? Like, I've never had somebody come from another culture where they don't have Santa Claus, and I try to sell them on the idea because they wouldn't believe it, right? They'd be like, this is a lie, whatever, right? We tell children they're Santa Claus because they're exploitable in this way. And there's a question as to whether we should exploit them at the very moment of their vulnerability in life. So this is throughout Scripture. So if you just think about, okay, so this is something that begins in Genesis and works its way all the way through the Torah of Moses and then through the prophets. The prophets are very mad about this stuff when Israel exploits the poor or the vulnerable. And then when Jesus comes along, he says very similar things. You know, because when I was thirsty, you did not give me a drink of water as you did to these, you did to me, right? And so the idea... then we can now take this idea. This is what we call Hebraic thought. There's a notion of justice that has a certain disposition towards the vulnerable. Okay. When somebody is vulnerable, we should stop and think very carefully about how we're going to treat them at that moment. And now we can just kind of look out into our world and say, well, who's like that, right? So I think right now of an easy one, the immigration crisis with people coming over the border in Mexico. And you can argue left and right about whether a nation has a right to secure borders or whether these people are committing a crime already by coming across the border. That's a separate issue. The question I would want to force this on, or I think if the prophets were here today, like coaching us on this issue, thinking about their thoughts on these issues across the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, they would say something like, okay, yeah, they broke a law, whatever, there's a national problem here. The president says one thing, people say another thing. That doesn't matter. You have a mother and child who are in a desert right now, and they've come a long way to be there, and they've probably been exploited by people to get there. From immigrants I've known who have actually made this trek, who are now legal, you know, they tell you about hearing women being raped in the night, and I mean, it's a pretty harrowing trip. And so just making that trip, there's probably a good chance that they've already been physically and emotionally exploited at that point. So I think the prophets would stop us and say, look, justice demands that we just think very carefully about how we treat these people this moment. We might have to do some legal processes. We might have to do some other things. We might have to return them to their country of origin. But you need to be very careful how you treat them at that moment. And that God actually is like watching you and thinking about how he's going to treat you in a day to come according to how you treat others. I mean, that's the words of Jesus. He doesn't split hairs on this matter. So understanding something as broad as justice and then kind of narrowing down and, okay, justice for those who are vulnerable, whether they put themselves in a foolish position or not, that's actually not the issue of justice in the Hebrew Bible. It doesn't seem to care whether they put themselves in that position or not. It's that they're in that position. Now, how do we treat them? So that to me seems like a very brass tacks on the ground. Here's how you need to think about this issue.
The eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth passage is often cited as the proof for retributive justice in the Bible. So how would you interpret that saying in light of the theme of caring for the vulnerable?
So that's a good example because when you look at Exodus, I think it's 22 there, the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, it shows up. Most people don't notice the context in which that passage shows up. It shows up in a passage about how you're to treat your slaves, right? So, and we could even set aside for the moment, yes, the Bible believes some form of slavery is okay. Of course, the form of slavery it has in mind looks nothing like the American institution, the peculiar institution of slavery. It really is more like employment. It's closer to employment with a stronger relation between the boss and the servant. So it says, you know, if people hurt each other, eye for an eye, wound for wound, burn for burn. And I think it's easy enough to think that today, as it would have been in the ancient world, people would have heard that and they would have thought, or here's how I hear it, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I hear that as, okay, if somebody burns me, they're going to get theirs, right? I'm going to get them back. They're going to get burned. Even if it's the group of elders that comes along and does it, somebody's going to burn that person. And it's what we all want. I mean, it's like the basis of karma, right? Although karma would happen in the next life. It's like karma, you get it in this life. Yeah. It's even better than karma. But then that's the principle. And again, we talked about the rabbis had trouble interpreting exactly how do you apply this principle. So it lets you know it's a principle, not a law, right? It's not a discrete statute that you follow or break. It's a principle that has to be interpreted. So the next two sentences then interpret the principle for you with concrete application. So it says eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, burn for burn, wound for wound. And then it says, if one of you strikes the eye of your slave and puts their eye out or, you know, terminally wounds their eye, then you have to release the slave. And the next sentence after that, and if one of you breaks the tooth of your slave, then you have to release the slave because of their tooth, because of their eye. There's lots of interesting things going on there, like an eye and a tooth aren't, you know, you can live life without one eye and one tooth. Like, it doesn't ruin you. It's not like it's devastating. It's not like breaking their leg. But it says, no, even if you strike their mouth, I mean, just think about that. One punch to the mouth, you knock out one tooth, you lose them, right? And this is part of your workforce. This is how you survive, right? As you have employees who help you gather. And so it's interesting to me that justice there, in the principle, it looks like it's, if somebody hurts me, they're going to get theirs. But then the application is, well, no. If you're in a power position, if you have power over somebody else and you exploit them in the moment of vulnerability, if you use their servant status with regard to you as a reason to physically abuse them, then you lose, right? It goes all out from under you. And so to me, that seems to reinforce this broader notion of justice with respect to the vulnerable, which to me says, okay, even eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, which seems very harsh, is actually... it's meant to restrain you, the one in power, from doing things that you might otherwise think you have the right to do. And it's saying, no, you don't have the right to do that. Not even a tooth. Mm-hmm. Can't lose. Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Center for Hebraic Thought podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, or leave us a review wherever you found us. Want to learn more about Hebraic Thought? Visit our website at HebraicThought.org.